When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Confessions of a Debut Novelist with me, your host, Chloe Timms. This week, I'm talking to Pim Wang Te Chawat about her literary novel, The Moon Represents My Heart. Pim is a Thai-Chinese writer from Bangkok. Her short stories, poems and articles have been published in various websites, literary magazines and journals. She has a degree in English literature from King's College London, and graduated Edinburgh Napier University with a Master's in Creative Writing. In this episode, we discuss how she set up the rules for time travel in her novel, the challenges of writing in her second language, and what it's like when your book's optioned by Hollywood star Gemma Chan. But first, here's Pim with an excerpt from The Moon Represents My Heart.
Joshua and Lily, 1988. Timing is imperative when it comes to love. Lily had always believed this. Meeting the right person does not matter if the circumstances are not aligned. If both of you are in different stages of your lives, you might be entangled for a while, sometimes even for longer than a while, but eventually the wires will always get crisscrossed or severed. It is inevitable. Timing, Lily always said, gives love wings. If timing had not cooperated, she would not have decided to go to that New Year's Eve party at Islington on the last day of 1987. She would never have stood outside smoking by Pauline's rose bushes and met Joshua. A month or so later, if timing had not been on her side, Pauline would not have suggested going for Chinese after class one evening, and they would not have ended up in the restaurant where Joshua worked, exactly when he was working. Lily would not have worn her yellow dress, heard turquoise earrings, sat down at the table with her friends and almost gasped when he walked briskly over, a notepad and pencil in hand, ready to take their order. His eyes swept over her face and then he said, just one small change. She and her friends could have gone somewhere else. He could have been assigned a different shift. Her mother could have birthed her a week later. She could have taken a wrong turn down road once, and their love would never have materialized. But Joshua would disagree. Love, Joshua said, does not hinge upon timing. Instead, the opposite is true. Why fear time when fundamentally it is what you make of it? If he had not agreed to go with Kevin to that party in Islington, if Lily and her friends had not shown up at his restaurant a month or so later, love would find other ways to bend time to its shape, to its design. Other things would have fallen into place, on a different day perhaps, under a different sky. They would have eventually met, their lives intertwining and molding into one. Fate made it inevitable. She might even be in the same yellow dress, with turquoise in her ears, her face lighting up in surprise as their eyes met, and she would say, oh, it's you.
Hi, Pim. Welcome to the podcast. I'm really happy to have you on with me today to discuss your debut novel, The Moon Represents My Heart.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Thanks for coming. Can you start by telling us what The Moon Represents My Heart is all about?
Oh, thank you. So The Moon Represents My Heart is a story about a family of British Chinese time travelers. So the story starts when the parents, Joshua and Lily, go back to the past on a trip, and for some unexplainable reason, they don't come back. So the story follows their children, Tommy and Eva, as they deal with the ramifications of that loss and how that affects their own ability to time travel. And we also follow the story of the father as a young man, as he moves from Hong Kong to the UK, and how he meets his wife and they fall in love and start a family. So I always say that this book is like the Joy Luck Club meets the time traveler's wife. So it's a story about like family, loss, and just confronting our past and moving forward with hope. So that's the kind of the gist of it.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as I saw this book was about time travel, I was like, yes, give it to me because I love time travel kind of stories, and it must be so exciting to have that kind of maybe daunting as well to know you have to write about different time periods too. But I wondered, I read that this novel kind of began life or came to you when you were at quite a reflective point in your life, and I was wondering if you can tell us what inspired this book.
I think what inspired it was that I was thinking a lot about, like you said, it was a very reflective period in my life also. I was thinking a lot about what makes me who I am today as a person, and what makes me make the choices that I make in life, basically. And I found a lot of it led back to my own upbringing, and in particular, my relationship with my father, and by extension, his relationship with his father. So it made me really want to kind of like examine when we look back to our own history and our own past, and studying how our history affects who we are in the present, and how do we find a way to sort of not just kind of stew in the past and just like get like so weighed down by it, but figure out a way to accept our past, our history, our family, and what's the best way for us to like move forward with all of that kind of like baggage, if that makes sense.
And where did the or when did the time travel element come into the novel? What when did you think that's what I'm going to write, a time travel novel?
That's a good question. I think it's because I was thinking about my own history so much, like my own history with my dad, and also past relationships that I've had as well. And I was thinking about my own losses a lot, to the point where I felt like I just spent so much time thinking about the past, like way too much. And it just made me think about, oh, what would happen if someone was to become addicted to staying in the past, to addicted to traveling back in time? And like you, I've always loved time travel stories as well. Like, I'm not a big sci-fi reader, but I've loved like movies and shows that has like the element of time travel. So I've always wanted to use time travel to explore that aspect of human emotion, like the loss and the longing and all of that. So I felt like when I was thinking about my own past a lot, I felt like, oh yeah, what if someone were to become addicted to just like staying in the past and not being rooted in the present? So I think that helps me like come up with the premise of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. Because this novel is a lot about grief and loss, and I want to touch on it in a moment. But let's talk about the time travel element a little bit more, because I guess you and the parents very much at the beginning kind of set up the rules of like, do not speak, do not say this, or this is what you have to say in this particular moment. Did you have to kind of come up with your own like time travel rules about what your characters could and could not do? So kind of to explain to us how you kind of decided how your time travel was going to work then.
Oh, that was really hard. I definitely had to come up with my own rules. And I think what helped a lot is I watch, maybe this is not the best kind of research. I remember I had my mentor who was like, oh, maybe you should read the Stephen Hawking's book, A Brief History of
Oh
Time.
no.
Yes. And I was like, that's a great su suggestion, but no. So basically all I do is I did a lot of reading and reading and watching a lot of time travel stories. So I read many novels like I think
I'm trying to remember the name. How We Lose the Time War is one of those books. And Before the Coffee Gets Cold, this Japanese book that got translated into English. I watch About Time is a huge inspiration, the movie, the Richard Curtis movie. And also Doctor Who. I'm a big Doctor Who fan. So my favorite two episodes of Doctor Who is the David Tennant episode Blink with Carey Mulligan with the Weeping Angels, and also you've seen it.
I love those things, so yeah.
And also the Matt Smith episode Vincent and the Doctor, where he goes back in time and sees Vincent Van Gogh.
Yeah,
so basically I did a lot of that was my research, and I basically wanted the time travel to be rooted in emotions and themes and the characters themselves. So basically I try to come up with rules that will help facilitate what my characters would go through, right, as a journey. So I wanted to strip out as much of the science as possible to make it kind of easy for the readers to follow as well, and keep the core of the story being on the characters. So in the books, this is not a spoiler, but for example, like each family member has a different like time traveling ability. Like for some of them, they can go to a very specific time period, while the other, like the daughter Eva, can go back to the timelines of her immediate family member, while the son Tommy can only go back to like the 30s and 40s in like London. So I wanted so for those rules, I basically based those rules according to the characters themselves. Like what are they passionate about? Or what's the history that matters the most to them? So I try to like make the rules. So I do have rules, but I try to not make them get to like weighed down by science, and tie them as much as I can to the characters.
Yeah, it's beautifully done. And the way you write, particularly when the characters travel back in time, your language is very lyrical, and on the page it looks kind of very poetic and kind of fragmentary, and I really love that, because it's almost like giving you kind of snapshots of the world in a really beautiful way. And I wondered what was behind that decision, because I know you've written poetry, and I wondered whether you kind of you wanted to bring some of that into a novel.
Oh, first of all, thank you so much. That's so amazing to hear, because I, when you said snapshots, that's exactly what I tried to like, that was my intention, to make it seem like snapshots, like memories, like fragmented memories. when you said I write poetry, I feel like my poetry is very, it's basically my, like, I don't know, it's like my little, like, I don't even want to call it a side hustle, but it's basically my outlet to vent about my love life. So it's kind of, it's not anything highbrow. It's just like, oh, it's raining today, I stare out the window, he broke my heart, kind of like poetry. it's not great. But for this book, I read this great memoir by this poet called Yisa Daly Ward. I think she's from Manchester. So the memoir is called The Terrible. So it's written about her life growing up and her like coming of age. So it's kind of nonfiction. So it's memoir, but she wrote all of it in like poetry form. So she did a lot of like experimental stuff with her prose. And when I read that, it sort of blew my mind, because I felt like, oh, wow, you can really tell like a quote unquote prose story using like poetry like techniques and like the rhythm of the sentences, and how sentences and paragraphs are broken up can really affect the emotion of the prose in a way that adds another layer to it. So I wanted to like apply all of those, especially the time travel scenes, because I want to really create this like visceral reaction for the readers, like when they're in the past, that they can really feel, oh, this is traveling back in time, and it's not just another like typical scene. So that's so just The Terrible was a huge inspiration.
I've not read that, but it sounds amazing, and yes. I love the way your kind of time travel sections look on the page, but also the way they read. And I kind of feel like as well, because of the way they're written, you almost zip along them quite fast, which is almost like traveling yourself in a strange way. Yeah. It was a great decision to make. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about the themes that you explored in this novel, because obviously grief and loss are so vital to the story, particularly when the parents go missing at the beginning of the novel is like a death almost. Can you tell us about why you chose those particular themes to explore?
I think one of the main reasons was that when I first started writing the book, my grandfather just passed away a couple of years ago. And the year he passed away was also the year that my dad got diagnosed with cancer. So it was a very like so I had to it was a lot a bit of like it's a grief of a certain like kind that you had to deal with that. And so and I feel like in my past I've also had like other losses in life. Sometimes loss doesn't really mean that people passing away. It also means like people not being in your life anymore, like people you love, just like you fall out of touch with, or something happens and they can no longer be in your life. And I do feel like those kind of things, like love and loss, go hand in hand. So, and I felt like when I was going through that reflective period, what I was really struggling with was how to come to terms with those losses and how do I find new relationships and new connections while knowing that there is a risk of loss again. So I think that's part of that's I think that's a huge reason, like my grandfather and also my own experiences, why I wanted to like touch on these things in the book. It's kind of like my own journey in a way, playing out on the page through other characters.
Yeah, I think the kind of emotional core of the novel comes across probably because you were feeling it so strongly as you were writing it as well. I wanted to kind of go back in time ourselves and talk about how you came to this point in your life. How did you get to this point and in your publishing journey? Have you always wanted to write a novel? Had you always been kind of working away on something your whole life?
I've always loved storytelling because as a child, I loved like watching movies and I loved reading so much because I was read all the time. Like when I was young, like when I was eating dinner, when I was walking through the mall, I would like read. My parents had to sit me down and be like, "You're reading too much. You have to like engage with the world." So when I was young, I would write like little stories for my siblings, and sometimes I would just tell stories to myself. It sounds kind of insane, but I would like bounce a tennis ball around and tell stories to myself. It's a bit unhinged. And then, when I started growing up, I wrote quite a bit of fan fiction. So I wrote quite a bit of fan fiction, and there was a period when I was working as a freelancer. So I would write articles on movie criticism, culture, TV show criticism, and stuff like that. So I've always loved, like I said, storytelling, analyzing storytelling, and all of that. And but I've always wanted to write a novel because I loved reading so much. So, but I've never like seriously written like a long form thing, not counting a very long fan fiction story that I wrote. Like I've never written like a finish a whole novel until like Moon. So I did my postgrad degree in creative writing because I really like reached a point where I felt like, okay, I really need to make this dream happen. So coming from Thailand, you really have no idea how to do any of this, like what the pathway is. So I took the course, I took the postgrad course at Edinburgh Napier in Scotland. And that really helped me to A, like finish the book, like craft the book, finish it, and B, like get it published.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So how did you come to get your agent then? So was it after you'd done the course that you then started pursuing agents?
Yes. So the book, the novel is actually, the novel started as the dissertation or like the major project for my postgrad. Yes. So for our program, we need to have 20K or 30K of the novel done and a chapter outline of what happens from beginning to end. So when the course finished, I had that. And then I just continued writing until the book finished. And then when I had the finished book, I started querying for agents. And that's how I got my wonderful agent, Liza. So I think I finished it, the first draft in November. I got November 2020, and I got Liza around June 2021. Mm-hmm. So I clean it up and then send it out. And yeah, so, and then Liza helped me get One World to publish the book. So yay.
And how, exactly. How quickly was it from getting your agent to getting your book deal? Was it a quite a quick kind of submission process, or did that take a long time?
Luckily, mine was quite quick. So I got Liza in, like I said, June 2021. My deal with One World was confirmed around October 2021. So I got Liza, we edited it together, and then we sent it out. So yeah, so it was quite just a few months. So yeah, it's very fortunate.
And I'm imagining that you are not allowed to talk much about this, but I'm going to ask you anyway, because
yes.
Amazing, exciting, absolutely incredible news. Your novel is being made into a TV show with Gemma Chan. She's starring in it and she's producing it. Tell us about that. Tell us about finding out about that. And I know you probably can't tell us anything, but are you involved at all, or did you decide that was going to be someone else's job? What's the situation there?
Yeah, so the book has been optioned. So what it means is that someone has the rights to turn it into a TV show, a limited series. So most people would understand that it's getting made for sure, but we don't, anything can go wrong in Hollywood, fingers crossed. So hopefully we get to the stage of it getting made. But right now, the signs are good. It's moving at a steady pace, not including the strike, the strike in Hollywood. But yes, but so how that happened is so surreal. I got my publisher in, October. And in December, Liza sent the book, my agent sent the book to a film agent in LA. Her name is Tara Tominski. She's amazing. And she sent it out to a bunch of people in Hollywood. And Gemma's team got the book, and then Gemma read it during Christmas. And she related to it because there's so much, it's a British Chinese family. And her dad is also from Hong Kong and all that. So she read it, and then she got in touch wanting to option the book. And so we had her on board. And since we had her on board, it was production companies were interested, and eventually we landed with 21 Labs, who made Stranger Things and Netflix. So, and they seem very excited about the project and very passionate about it. And so far we in the process of getting a script together, and they've been very kind, including me in the process, letting me provide feedback on the adaptation. And yeah, so it's been a very surreal, very crazy, crazy experience. And I'm trying not to get too ahead of myself and be okay, let's just take it one step at a time. But yeah, it's definitely very mind-blowing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said, it's one of those things where people hear optioned and they think it's going to be on TV in 6 months, but these things take a long time. But yes. Hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll see it at some point. I'd love to know a little bit more about you as a writer And what kind of, what things about writing do you find difficult? What do you have to kind of really work at? What's your kind of number one thing that you wish you didn't have to go through when you were writing?
Oh, so I think what kind of writer am I? I'm writing in my second language, so that is a big challenge in and of itself. I think, like, most people think I'm Asian American, or I grew up in the UK. I've lived in the UK, but I was born in Thailand. I was raised in Thailand, so I'm writing in my second language. That can be, and that's an interesting thing. And also, I feel like I'm a very emotive writer, if that makes sense. I would say that I'm very fascinated by the themes that are in this novel. Like, I feel like a lot of my writing is about, like, loss, about longing, about female isolation. Those are themes that I find are very close to my heart. And I really want to add a hint of, like, hope in my writing. And I hope that when people read my writing, they feel connected to someone and they feel like there's hope. So that's a very important part of why I write. And I think my strengths are definitely, like, characters and emotion and atmosphere. Like, I'm a very, like, vibesy writer. I don't know what the right word is. I'm like a Terrence Malick kind of, like my, yeah, it's just vibes, no plot. Yeah, and I feel
the worst. Yeah. I always think, like, why do we have to have, like, some complicated plot? Why can't we be in a room talking, or, you know?
Yeah, I do feel like my weaknesses are definitely, like, plot and action. And I really, and that's an area I really want to get better at, like, my next book. Like, I really want it to, I really want to, like, improve that side of my writing. I feel like I actually have, like, limited imagination. That's why I have trouble with plot and action, but... But yeah, so I think that sums me up as a writer.
I wouldn't agree. I don't think you've got limited imagination at all.
That's so
I know one thing that you do kind of outside of your writing is that you are very passionate about working and inspiring kind of underprivileged Thai youths. Can you tell us what work you're doing outside of your writing, or including your writing, to kind of inspire young people through writing?
Yeah, I wish I was doing more, and I actually don't think I'm doing as much as I want to be doing at just yet, but I really hope I can get that in the future. But yeah, I'm very passionate about that, because, like, obviously growing up in Thailand, we aren't taught to write or to engage with literature or storytelling in a way that you guys would get to in, like, the West, for example. Like, in Thailand, in our schools, we don't really read books, or we don't really have, like, this, like, essay writing culture. Like, it's basically, like, the teacher, like, an example is, like, a teacher would come in, they would write stuff on the blackboard, and they will just copy it down, memorize it, and then do the exams. So we're not really taught to channel our creativity, to explore it, or to apply critical thinking to a piece of art at all. So, and I feel like writing is a great tool to help young people discover who they are, or to express the emotions, or express what they're going through in life, even though they might not become writers, like, professionally. It's still a very helpful tool. So in the past, I've done mentoring sessions, like one-on-one mentoring with young Thai writers. So I work with them. So they bring what they're working on, like a project, to me, and we, like, discuss it, go through it together. That was really amazing. And I've done workshops and, like, talks with young people, and help, and basically using writing to help them, like, get in touch with their emotions, get in touch with who they are as people. And yeah, I really hope to do more of those workshops in the future. So whenever I'm in Thailand, I'm, like, really aiming to, like, get more of those, like, events out there, so people can, like, so young people can come join and engage with that. Yeah,
absolutely. I always think doing kind of workshops and mentoring is just so rewarding, and it's a lovely part of the kind of an adjacent role to the writing. It's a really enjoyable thing to do.
Yeah, and also in Thailand, we don't really have a pathway for people who are like creatives. There's more and more of it right now, but it's still very limited compared to like the UK.
So, Pim, I was wondering what for you has been kind of the most challenging or difficult part of the publishing process. I think a lot of writers find that the journey from when you sign your contract to when your book is out is full of ups and downs, and there's a real roller coaster. Is there anything that you think you've learned in that time that you would like to kind of say, right, if to the next cohort of authors, if I could advise them with one thing, this is what I'd say. What would be your advice?
I don't know if I'm equipped to advise anyone. but I feel like what I've learned the most is probably like the imposter syndrome doesn't go away. Like at first, like when the goal is like, oh, getting your book published, like somehow that would like validate whatever. But then when you get your book published, it doesn't, you just discover new things that you worry about, and you discover new doubts about yourself and your work. So I think if I were to give advice, I think it would just be what I'm trying to tell myself as well, to write what you're passionate about, like write what's in your heart, and just, yeah, if someone reads it, like one person or two people, and they connect with the work and they see themselves in the work, then I think that's already worthwhile. Like, it's a very competitive industry, so it's very easy for you to kind of look at what you don't have compared to like other writers, etc. So I think it's very that's what I'm trying to do. I think it's very important for us to like keep it about why we write in the first place. Even though that can be very difficult when it comes to, you know, like publishing, marketing, and all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, it is tricky to almost blank out everyone else and just concentrate on what's happening for you and enjoy the things that are happening for you, when you're looking at other people and thinking, oh, okay, their book's doing really well. Yeah. Is my book doing well? Like, what's, you know?
Yeah,
it is tricky. That's good advice.
Yeah. Have you read Yellow Face?
I have. Oh my goodness. It's amazing.
Yes, I feel like that's a very accurate or very far from reality.
Yeah, it's kind of brutally honest. Maybe if you're thinking about being published, maybe you should read The Other Face.
Yes.
For a dose of reality.
Yeah. I think the author called it like a horror story about the publishing industry.
Yeah, but you know, the amount of people that I know who have read it and are like highlighting passages, and then, you know, sending it to your like kind of your fellow writing friends going, this is a bit too close to accuracy.
Yeah. Yeah, and I read it on the week of my publication, like on the week leading out to my publication. I was reading it, and I'm like, maybe this is not the best book to read this week.
So finally, Pim, can you tell us anything? I know you've just finished your first draft, so can you tell us anything about what's next? What are you working on?
So my second book is very different to Moon. So it's very contained, and it's a smaller scale book. So it's about two people, and it's about like two people forming a connection. It's supposed to be a love story. So it's about like a love story that kind of like explores the connection between love and fear and like anxiety. Sounds fun. It's quite tragic. But yeah, so that's the second book. It's a love story. It's like a romance, maybe not a love story, but like a romance.
Nice.
About love. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. And it's interesting that it's so different from your first book, but your writing is beautiful, so I look forward to reading it, whatever the genre.
Oh, thank you so much, that's very kind.
Pim, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
That was Pim Wang Tae Chawat talking about her literary novel, The Moon Represents My Heart, which is out now and available to buy. And if you'd like to support this podcast, debut authors and independent bookshops, you can now shop in the Confessions of a Debut Novelist bookshop, hosted by bookshop.org, which I've linked down below in the show notes. If you fancy buying any of the books you've heard on this podcast, then the majority of them can be found in this bookshop. And if you can, I would really appreciate you supporting me, supporting the authors and independent bookshops by buying them through this online store. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Or if you've subscribed already, it'd be great if you could leave me a review. See you next time.